This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
What kind of programs does this school have? How are the test scores? How many kids do a classroom? Homes.com knows these are all things you ask when you're home shopping as a parent. That's why each listing on Homes.com includes extensive reports on local schools, including photos, parent reviews, test scores, student-teacher ratio, school rankings, and more. The information is from multiple trusted sources and curated by Homes.com's dedicated in-house research team. It's all so you can make the right decision for your family. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
Where'd you get those shoes? Easy. They're from DSW. Because DSW has the exact right shoes for whatever you're into right now. You know, like the sneakers that make office hours feel like happy hour. The boots that turn grocery aisles into runways. And all the styles that show off the many sides of you. From daydreamer to multitasker and everything in between. Because you do it all in really great shoes. Find a shoe for every you at your DSW store or DSW.com.
Sports Radio 610 presents Payne and Pendergast.
All right, Pettycast time. Text in 713-572-4610. The things that you're petty about, that you've observed others being petty about. We highlight pettiness. This is a petty show in general, but we really take it to the next level in the Pettycast every week.
This is where we let our petty flag fly and we become the worst versions of ourselves,
yes,
damn it.
You got it. You got it. All right, so let's do this here. This popped up on my timeline yesterday, and I'm leading with this because since he retired from Philadelphia Sports Talk Radio, we've not heard much from Angelo Cataldi, who went through a period on this show where his audio was amongst our favorite to play back in 2022. That was Cataldi right there.
Yeah, he's just one of these old school, old dude sports radio guys from the Northeast who hated the Astros and was so entertaining in hating the Astros that I loved him. I wish I had discovered him earlier in his career because he ended up retiring a couple years ago.
Very entertaining. Now, we know that Angelo Cataldi, being in Philadelphia, probably has been through some things with Andy Reid. You know, they didn't get this version of Andy Reid in Philly. They got a pretty good version. I mean, Andy Reid in Philly was very successful.
They did a bunch of, like, Cataldi had once, I think he commissioned chartered a bus to go up to the draft to boo the Eagles draft pick the year they drafted Donovan McNabb and all that. Yeah.
So there are some things going on. So he's got a history with Andy Reid. This is Cataldi on with Zach Gelb. And this is after the Super Bowl, saying Andy Reid overrated.
Let me let your audience in on a little secret, all right? Because most of the country will argue this to the death. Andy Reid is way overrated as a coach, all right? Andy Reid was in Philadelphia 14 years. He won zero championships. Doug Peterson was here 5. He won one. Nick Sirianni's been here 4. He won one. The only reason Andy Reid was winning big games in KC was because he had this mastermind, Mahomes, making up plays on the run and doing brilliant stuff. The only reason Mahomes didn't do that yesterday is he had no time to do it. And Andy Reid could not figure out a way to give him time to do it. And the truth is, Mahomes is a stud. Mahomes is a great player despite yesterday. Zach, no argument. Reid, the all-time fraud of American sports, is Andy Reid.
That is what the Pettycast is all about. The great American Pettycast is all about that right there.
And he's so confident that he's right. It's a fun exercise. If you go through anybody who's achieved great things in history, or in like sports or history in real life, if all you do is list their faults, you can make them sound awful.
Sure.
Like, let's let's talk about Abraham Lincoln and all the elections that he lost early. You can make him sound like the dumbest, worst people on earth, and he leans into it full bore
big
there.
Big time. Yeah, that was Angelo Cataldi. The mastermind Mahomes. Like, what does he even mean?
So in his mind, Mike McCarthy is a... Because Mike McCarthy had won, he was only a couple years into his tenure in Green Bay, right?
Yeah.
So it's easy to win a Super Bowl. Yeah. Winning several Super Bowls is easy when you have a great quarterback, I guess.
you want one more? You want one more? Cataldi goes next. Like, it's a little personal here.
And one other thing. These commercials are out showing how charming and funny he is. I was there for 14 years. I talked to him a ton. He is neither. He is not that at all. It's all Madison Avenue. And I'm hoping now the world will start to see Andy Reid in a different light because he's a fraud. He's not that great.
I don't think we
has anybody referred to the advertising industry as Madison Avenue since the 90s? What the hell? I'm watching Mad Men? Yeah. What the hell is this?
I'm so glad you like this audio. I was so excited when I saw this yesterday.
I can't. Mind you, people, this is the kind of stuff that gets you a seven-figure salary.
Oh, yeah. He made a ton of money radio in Philly. Yes. Yes. It is. It is. We live in a strange industry, man. All right. Continuing with the petty cast here. DeAndre Hopkins, former Texan, he complained about the refs after the game. We played the snippet, the very specific ref complaining part. I felt for, and maybe this flies in the face of the petty cast, but I felt for full context, we play the entire answer. DeAndre Hopkins, by the way, his media session at the Super Bowl, a minute 31 total. Like, this was the only long answer he gave. Everything else was 2 and 3 word answers.
Yeah.
And my favorite is at the very end of this where he signs off after the media is like, all right, we're not getting anything good out of this guy.
Loss is the loss. You know, it says W or L at the end of the day. Those guys beat us. So, tough loss. You know, it's my first year being with the Chiefs, and, you know, I saw a lot of things in the media about the refs, but obviously what y'all going to say now about the refs and us? When there was a lot of touchy calls, are y'all going to report that? Are y'all going to talk about the refs now? Ciao Bella.
And he walks off.
Ciao Bella.
Ciao Bella, and he walks off. That didn't make the cut yesterday. We had to have that in there.
I think it belongs in the petty cast because DeAndre's being petty there.
Yes.
I don't know. It's almost like... I spent way more time trying to figure out exactly how to process him saying that. Because you can almost make an argument that he was saying that, you know, yeah, we're only good when those chippy calls are there or not there. I can't figure it out. It's almost like for him it was worth it to lose the game because it shut down all the talk about the officiating or something. Yeah. I don't know.
Yeah, he and I played the whole answer there because the question was, what do you draw from this game? And he was doing fine for about 8 seconds. Like, you know, a loss is a loss. Doesn't matter. It's a Super Bowl. You know, loss hurts. This is my first year with the Chiefs. Now here it goes. My salvo on the refs. Yeah.
Are you going to blame the officials for me letting that ball bounce off my left hand?
Right.
After I stumbled on the turf?
Yeah. The Chiefs themselves.
You're going to blame the officials for our offensive line sucking?
Yeah.
Huh? You guys going to do that? I thought that's what you're supposed to do.
I felt like someone who's been on the Chiefs longer than like 2 months was going to walk up on the stage and like kind of walk him off and go, no, this is not it. This is not the time, DeAndre.
Yeah.
This is not how we handle our business. All right,
Ciao Bella.
Ciao Bella is an excellent sign off. My quick Super Bowl petty, Seth, when it comes to the Chiefs, this is my petty right here. If the networks are going to show Taylor Swift while she's jumping around with Travis's mom and hugging Brittany Mahomes and happy after a score and, oh, look, he scored again. Oh, if they're going to show that, if they're going to take advantage showing that, they have to show her when this bleep is going poorly also. They have to pan over. For the rest of America, they have to pan over to Taylor Swift while they're losing 40-6, and Travis looks like he's going to cry on the field.
Yeah, yeah.
Are you with me on this?
Right. Yeah. And they need to cover it on SportsCenter when she dumps him this week. But now that she realizes that the honeymoon is over, like, wait a second. Wait, I got booed by thousands of people, and then you guys didn't win?
Right.
This is not what I signed on for, clown.
Yeah.
Oh, you want to retire now? Like, maybe you don't understand the give and take in this relationship, Travis. I'm not here to be with some has-been who can't even win a stupid Super Bowl.
Oh, my God. The song she's going to write about him, it's going to be an anthem. It's going to be beautiful.
I think there's a lot of NFL fans that maybe didn't think much at all about, not that they thought positively or negatively about her, but they didn't think at all about Taylor Swift, who now don't like Taylor Swift
right.
because of her being so tied to and visible with the Chiefs, that now will love Taylor Swift if she dumps Travis Kelce.
Yes, 100%.
This week.
That's her baby face turn.
It
That's
has to be this
that.
Week.
Yes.
Yeah.
She needs to hit him with a chair. And yes, absolutely.
If you want to add legions of angry 40-year-old men to your fan base, yeah. then you need to dump Travis Kelce right
yes,
now.
Yes, bingo. Quick one on the Jim Adler Texas Hammer text line. Pettycast, this is from Cinco. Is it petty to have stood and applauded in the privacy of my own home every time they showed Mahomes' dumb, sad mug at the end of the game? No. I mean, is it petty? Yes. But it fits perfectly in this segment right now.
Yeah, you want him to suffer.
Yes.
Yes.
Yes, yes.
He's always got some bags under his eyes. He's got a little bit of the Vince Vaughn thing going.
Mm-hmm.
I felt like they were especially dark in that game.
Yeah.
It looked like he was beleaguered and beat down.
Got a little kid at
possibly
home,
hung over.
He's got a little baby.
I don't know. Has anybody come out and said that he and Travis weren't drunk off their asses the night before the Super Bowl?
They did go. I get the People Magazine, five times a day newsletter. They did go on a double date while they were in New Orleans, the two couples.
Not the night before the Super Bowl.
Just at some point there was pictures of them out on a double date in the French Quarter. Dan Orlovsky, who may or may not be leaving ESPN. That's not what I'm petty over, but I would like Dan to remain on TV. I think he does a good job. He did something yesterday, though, that the media should never, ever, ever do. So maybe this is me being petty. Don't ever, ever do this, Dan. Don't ever apologize for an opinion.
I owe publicly Jalen Hurts an apology. I was probably one this year who's been the hardest on him. I'll go back a couple weeks ago when I said the passing game's not good enough right now and I don't think it's going to get better. All he's done since then is have his two best games of the year on the two biggest stages that the game has been on.
Yeah, so you were wrong. Don't
right.
apologize to Jalen Hurts for your... Don't ever apologize to an athlete for your opinion on their play, on how they play. Like, don't ever do that.
This wasn't as bad as when sometimes a player will be genuinely performing poorly, and then you point out that this player is performing poorly, and then all of a sudden the player starts playing better, and people will say, well, looks like you owe somebody an apology. Like, why? For being accurate?
Right.
Like, no, I will not apologize for that, but sometimes people do.
Yeah.
They still apologize for being accurate about them being wrong. If Orlovsky was inaccurate or wrong, he needs to apologize to his family.
Yeah.
Because it's less money he'll be making in the future.
I don't know.
That's not true either.
being wrong
is actually one of the best things you can do.
What are we doing?
In the business.
No, being wrong pays you millions
Colin
of dollars.
Colin Cowherd has made a living off of being dramatically wrong at times.
Awful wrong.
And he makes really good money off of it. Yeah. So, no, Orlovsky, grab your... what do we used to say? Never mind. Act like you got a pair. Okay?
Oh, grab just, package. Yeah.
That's one of the best things that used to. That was a good lesson that I learned from the upperclassmen when I was in college. There was something about like to speak with confidence, even if you're not 100% certain. And they would say, just grab them and say what you mean to say.
Absolutely.
You know.
Yeah.
Don't dilly dally around.
Nope. Direct.
Come on, Orlovsky. Sound off like you got a pair.
That's it. And don't apologize. All right, last
needs
one.
Needs to eat more.
Last one. He's skinny.
He's emaciated.
Last one. I don't know if this is in the petty cast. I just couldn't find a spot for this, but I felt like I needed to play this, Seth, for you, just to see if you are as confused as I am about Antonio Brown's explanation of his bankruptcy. Apparently, Antonio Brown has blown through $100 million. He was on a podcast called The Nelk Boys. And he gave a very confusing explanation on his financial situation.
Do you know your total career earnings in the NFL? I think I made $100 million if you count off the field everything.
$100 million, yeah. For sure.
For sure.
How much did you spend of that $100
million? Well, I just filed Chapter 11 bankrupt. You feel me? So.
So did we go?
I spent all of it. I blew all my money.
Spent it all?
Yeah, I blew everything.
Honestly? There's nothing wrong with that. Because guess what? If you're having fun, wait, over what period of time?
If you had a great time, then power to you. But
I just had my financial, like my people who like in my life, they just took the money I made in the NFL and they didn't make that money mine no more. You know what I'm saying? They put it away for my family generation and the trust and then just threw it out there. So whatever I made in football, I just saved it for my family generation, my kids.
So they like invested it into the market or?
Yeah, they just took JP Morgan. They gave them a nice percentage out there monthly. You know, we don't do the market because the market is like the market, you know.
Up and down, yeah.
Yeah, it's like missionary, you know.
It only goes one way.
Okay, is that the whole thing, Ben?
Okay, so now I'm going to be petty about the host there, too.
Yeah.
I don't know, it only goes one way. All right, at first I got encouraged because I thought, okay, it sounds like maybe somebody took a bunch of his money and put it in a trust.
Yeah.
Just kind of like Allen Iverson, right? Because remember, people thought Allen Iverson was broke, but it turned out he had a trust that was going to pay him handsomely on into the future. Well,
at first, it sounded like he spent all his money partying, you know? Like, I blew that money.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. At first, it sounded like he blew all of
it.
But then it sounded like, oh, wait a second, they'd actually maybe put it into a trust.
Correct.
And it's however it works legally, that maybe the trust money is protected, but he's still, you know, has to manage through bankruptcy because of his current income can't keep up with his expenses.
Yeah.
But then by the end of it, I'm not sure if he just, if all of the invested money isn't also gone.
I don't know.
It sounds like he was maybe given an explanation for what they wanted to do, and maybe they didn't actually accomplish it. I don't know.
That cut's like a minute long, and I went through so many emotions there, because in the first 20 seconds, I'm like, oh, like typical athlete, just partied his way through $100 million, bought boats.
Yeah.
I mean, we know Antonio Brown is notorious for not paying people, right? I mean,
right.
The long list of people he owes money to, from jewelers all the way to chefs. But then like 30 seconds in, he made it sound like somebody stepped in and was doing the responsible thing, which is taking all of his money and putting it in a trust for his future generations. And my question is, how does bankruptcy enter the picture? That like, don't the bankruptcy courts, is it in somebody else's name, that money now?
Well, if he is, please feel free to correct me on the Jim Adler text line. If I'm incorrect here, as long as they put money in a trust before he entered into like a bankruptcy type situation, then he's got income from the trust potentially, but he might have expenses, current expenses that aren't covered by his trust income.
Oh my
so
God.
That would be the ideal scenario, I believe.
Yeah.
But you can't just all of a sudden, once you're in a bankruptcy type situation, be like, oh no, by the way, all my money's in a trust. So I don't know. I hope for Antonio Brown's sake that he does have money sitting there in a trust that he is drawing income from, and they just have to reorganize his debt. I have zero clue. I'm hoping.
Text
and minutes. For poor Morgan Stanley, the Saints that they are. I hope they did it on the up and up, because he just blasted their name right out there.
Yeah.
In conjunction with him being in bankruptcy.
I don't know. It's like a JP Morgan did it or something. They put it in this. I don't know. Someone says, I think Antonio Brown may be the richest guy in the NFL, and he doesn't even know it.
I was waiting for him to be like, I'm making $1 million a year off of the interest on the trust. But we have to restructure some of my debt.
Someone says yes, the trusts are protected from the bankruptcy. So there,
as long as you don't, you can't just you can't create an emergency trust when all of a sudden you're like, oh crap, I got to declare bankruptcy. Quick, put some money in a trust.
Do we need to put a disclaimer on this segment that this is not legal nor investing advice coming from us right now? We're just reading text. That's all. Okay.
No, I think the average man understands that. I don't know what the hell I'm talking about.
Right.
I don't. It is one of the weirder things. I used to tell guys all the time, like, to whoever you're working with, put some money in a trust. Put some money in a trust. Yeah. Put some money in a trust. And the NFL is very careful. They offer up financial education and everything, but they don't want to be telling guys what to do with their money.
You get sued that way, man. Yeah.
But I say this to anybody who has a financial windfall when you're 22 years old, slap as much of that in a trust as you can.
Yep.
Take your own Take your own human fallibility out of it,
yep.
Okay?
Yep.
You can have access to it when you're 35, even. It doesn't have to be something that's lifelong.
All right, Payne and Pendergast with you. That was the Pettycast. Keep texting in your petties. We will read them, I promise. One of the better interviews that we've had on Radio Row was completely unexpected, just not because this guy's not good, but Ryan Harris, former Texans offensive lineman, he had some really interesting things to say about the Texans. Do we feel better or worse about the Texans moving forward offensively after hearing what Ryan Harris had to say last week with the guys on? Who was he on? I think he was on with the guys on In the Loop.
Midday, yep.
Midday, yep. We'll discuss that coming up next.
Sports Radio 610 presents Payne and Pendergast.
Ryan Harris is a former Texans offensive lineman. He's on the radio in Denver. He does a lot of commentary, a lot of color analysis, both NFL. He was on Westwood One, I believe, doing the Texans playoff game against the Chargers. He's the color analyst for Notre Dame, collegiately.
He is?
He is. He's there.
Like for the radio broadcast?
Yes.
He does it every week?
Every week.
He's busy.
Yeah, he's busy. He's busy. He's very good, too. And this was a good conversation he had with the guys on In the Loop last week on Radio Row. And they talked about a number of things, including the Texans offensive line and the scheme and the coaching change. And here are Ryan Harris's thoughts on what led to the issues for the Houston Texans this season.
Because that's been like a big talking point with the Houston Texans. You know, Bobby Slowick was let go as offensive coordinator, and everybody's like, well, he was trying to force feed that system to linemen that are not equipped to block that system in terms of Laremy Tunsil and Titus Howard. Big dudes that more lean on you more than get to the second level, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
How real is that?
It's not real. What it is poor coaching.
Okay.
Because the thing is whether you're running the Parcells system or you're running the zone system, this is about expectation and consistency. And so what it sounds like when there's bad coaches is, well, we don't have the right alignment. Let me tell you what, you could put Titus over here on the Chiefs. You think they're going to be in this game? You better believe it, right? And I got to call the game for Westwood One when you guys were playing in the playoffs there, that first game against the Chargers. What an amazing game. What a fantastic defense. But that offensive line, they did not share the same technique. One thing you will see on Sunday, the Chiefs have the best offensive line coach in Andy Heck in the NFL. They have a center playing left tackle, and they're in the Super Bowl.
Mm-hmm.
So you're telling me it's a system?
No.
And so it's,
hey, we're not disagreeing.
No, but I'm saying, like, coach who says that, the truth is you didn't get a great offensive line coach. And what the sad thing is, I think even this year, there's only 7 offensive line coaches that actually played the position in the NFL. Could you imagine having a quarterback coach that never played quarterback?
Yeah.
That doesn't happen, but it happens with linemen, and that's what happened in Houston.
Okay, lots to unpack there.
That didn't age well as far as the Kansas City side of things, except that now the one thing about, I think the way Ryan Harris understood the question was different than perhaps the reality. We didn't hear the coaches blaming the personnel for them not being able to run the scheme, so I would excuse Bobby Slowick from that. I do think that there is a lot to be said for, look, you never want to put the scheme as the paramount thing. It's what can you do with the players that you have. I do think that they were asking the centers at times to do things that athletically they really weren't capable of doing. Like Chris Myers can do a lot of the stuff that Jared Patterson or Juice Scruggs can't, just because he's a more athletic, Chris was kind of undersized,
yeah,
but he could do a lot of that stuff. And I do think that they adjusted to leaning into some of the things that the Texans could do in the run game. They just did it too late. And Slowick was just, he didn't have enough alacrity to just get it done and make the adjustments and figure out those things until really late in the season and in the playoffs and with a few of those drives. So I think probably one of the things when they talked to Nick Caley that they liked is, I'm guessing Nick Caley talked a lot about adapting to what the strengths of your players are. Now, the other part of it, too, is what Ryan Harris was saying about technique. Right. The Texans' offensive line, they did not exercise good technique no matter what scheme you're running, including in pass protection. All the scheme talk is kind of out the window. There's just a few different types of pass protection and techniques that you use, and the Texans weren't using any of them at times. So I 100% agree with the coaching side of things and the responsibility for fixing the offensive line. I do disagree with him about a guy needing to have been a former player, just because there's so many examples of
Well, he said guys. a former offensive lineman.
Yeah, former offensive lineman.
Yeah.
I don't know. There's just so many. There's so many great position coaches who didn't play the position. That's more of a personal opinion thing, I think.
Yeah, I'm with you. I don't have a strong feeling on that either way. You're a former player. You probably better feel for that. I was surprised it's only 7 out of 32.
Yeah,
that are offensive linemen. Yeah, that
well,
number
were,
felt
I think
low.
That were was that. Offensive lineman or offensive lineman in the NFL?
He just said that of the 32 teams, only 7 of them have an offensive line coach who's a former offensive lineman. I'm assuming he means former NFL offensive lineman, not high school or whatever.
Yeah, but maybe it is. I don't know. There are a lot of good position coaches all over the place that didn't play their position. So I just disagree with him on that one.
Do you? Okay, so it sounds like Cole Popovich is going to be the offensive line coach, right? He was an internal hire or an internal promotion. He was the assistant O-line coach. So the reaction from a lot of people was, hey, you know, similar to the reaction with Jerod, there's people out there that seem to think like they should have walked up to the whiteboard and tackled Bobby Slowick and said, give me that pen. This is what we're going to do scheme-wise, right? So you got technique and you got the scheme. I could see an assistant coach not stepping in and saying, this is what we need to do on Sundays. These are the plays we need to call.
Yeah.
That the technique was so bad, does that reflect poorly on an assistant offensive line coach? That would seem like something that, if anything, there's an assistant offensive line coach would be coaching. It would be day-to-day technique, right?
Right, and especially with the young guys and all of that. What I can only guess is that they were asking the offensive line to do certain things that were really difficult, and that sometimes when you're asking guys to do things that are really difficult, like in the way they were kind of handling the penetrating defensive linemen and how they were supposed to work up the linebackers, that it's really hard to coach good technique when also perhaps fundamentally the scheme was asking them to do difficult or unorthodox things. I mean, that's an excuse that I would make. Think about this in terms of the military, I suppose. It's if you got a really bright young lieutenant, but he's working underneath a colonel who's an absolute jackass, there's only so much a lieutenant's going to be able to do to fix that unit. And it's, you know, because you have to be a good soldier and do what you're told and try to execute what you're instructed to do. Then you don't blame the lieutenant for the colonel being a jackass.
Right.
So likewise with Popovich, I can only guess that Caserio and D'Amico saw Popovich do some good things with other players, but that because of either Bobby Slowick or Chris Strausser, the offensive line coach, there was only so much he could do. And the whole notion about, like, why didn't somebody speak up? Like, because, again, you're a subordinate. You can speak up and you can offer suggestions. The list of successful NFL coaches who first made their name by calling the coach directly above them an idiot and going there and backstabbing and everything, it's a pretty short list. It's just not the way it operates.
It's not the way it operates in a workplace.
This isn't a Silicon Valley startup, you know? Like, you can't just go start your own NFL team and do it the right way. There's a hierarchy there. So there's only so much that an assistant position coach is going to be able to do to fix a system from within.
It's the silliest notion to me. Like, Jerod and Popovich could have stopped this.
Why didn't they say something?
Yeah.
Okay, all right. Like, it's,
they may have.
What do you need to say? And you make suggestions, and sometimes if it's a really good suggestion, you end up getting no credit for it, but at least the problem is fixed.
Yeah.
Because the guy that you make the suggestion to takes credit for it.
Yeah.
But at the end of the day, what's it matter? The problem is fixed. But a lot of times, you make suggestions, and the person above you just doesn't take the suggestion.
Here's one more from Ryan Harris talking about C.J. Stroud.
Well, you're talking to a guy, we won dozens of games in a Super Bowl by Peyton Manning calling the play that wasn't called in the huddle.
Yeah.
Right? So Peyton Manning, the first play he came back when we finished and sealed up our home field advantage with our boy Gary Kubiak.
Yeah.
We had a pass, check, run to the right, and he goes, hey, check, check, and we ran it to the left and got 9 yards. And what the problem is most coaches are unwilling to give up that control to a player. And at the same time, as a player, there's a certain point where your coach doesn't control things.
Yeah. Right?
If you don't have that, if you didn't have a play that was in within 20 seconds of that play clock, Peyton Manning's calling the play.
Yeah.
And so that's the kind of elite step that has to happen next for the Texans, especially C.J. Stroud. He has to command that offense and lead that team.
Yeah, and I think that comes down to a philosophy and a view of how to operate offensively that's definitely different than what Bobby Slowick wanted. I think even with a really good quarterback, CJ could make changes at the line of scrimmage, but it's somewhat limited in terms of just the breadth and expanse of what he's allowed to do. But even if he did have the ability or more ability to make changes at the line of scrimmage, the game management in the process was so poor for so much of the year, where they weren't getting the play call in time. They weren't breaking the huddle. They weren't getting up to the line. There was only so much CJ could have actually diagnosed pre-snap, because they felt like they were in hurry-up mode even when they weren't in hurry-up mode at all. And that part, maybe more than anything, might have been the thing that frustrated D'Amico, was, okay, what our process here is not putting us in a good position to be smart football players. So I would imagine that Kaylee, after being in New England and seeing the way Tom Brady operates, and then being with the Rams, as they changed their system to an extreme degree over the last few years with the Rams, and they partly because they had a veteran quarterback in Matt Stafford who could handle a lot more. The question becomes, all right, how much can a young quarterback handle? You know, Tom Brady was not the guy who was up there with the full playbook at his command his first few years in the NFL. It's you gotta figure out what can this guy do to where we're not adding too much to his plate. But I think Kaylee's philosophy is probably a lot more aggressive in that regard than Bobby Slowick's.
All right, we got a big announcement at the top of the hour, big programming announcement at 9 o'clock today that we're going to do. We're giving away rodeo tickets again in the 9 o'clock hour. It's a Rodeo Ticket Tuesday here on Sports Radio 610. We're giving them away all day long. Up next, Derek Stingley Jr. was on the Pivot Podcast. He wants to be a Texan for his entire career. I thought it was interesting, the Texan that he brought up in this conversation, as the example that he's patterning himself after to get the big contract extension. You'll hear that from Derek Stingley Jr. Also, keep listening all day long, but at least for an hour each day, to get your entry into the Slam Dunk in Vegas contest. If you want to go to Vegas, listen up for the next 15 seconds here, because if you listen for an hour a day on the Odyssey app to Sports Radio 610, you could be on your way to Circa Resort and Casino for the College Basketball Championship Tournament experience. And you're going to enjoy the biggest March hoops party there is at Stadium Swim at Circa. And you're going to do it with an extra $20,000 in your pocket to spend while you're in Vegas. Download the Odyssey app, listen for an hour each day, and you'll get your daily entry to the Slam Dunk in Vegas contest.
True North Store's beverage clubs just got bigger. Buy 6 Celsius, Pure Leaf Tea, Starbucks Energy, or Pepsi 1-liter flavors and get the 7th free. Whether you're craving an energy boost or just something to quench your thirst, we've got the drink for you. As a True Rewards member, sip and save with our clubs when you buy 6 and get the 7th free. Download now from your favorite app store for more details. True North Convenience Stores and True Rewards. Fast, friendly, clean.
Survivor 48 is here. And after every episode, dig deep into the show with On Fire, the official Survivor podcast. Listen to On Fire, the official Survivor podcast with me, Jeff Probst, every Wednesday after the show, wherever you get your podcasts.
Live from the Mokarem Injury Lawyers Studios, Sports Radio 610 presents Pain and Pendergast.
Aiden Pendergast with you. We got a big announcement, top of the hour, that we are going to get to. Very excited about it. Hopefully you will be as well. Here was Derek Stingley Jr., also somebody we're very excited about. Glad he's a Texan. He was on the Pivot Podcast. This was interesting because he's up for a big contract extension, Derek Stingley Jr., and I would imagine that contract is going to reset the cornerback market. If anybody can, it's Derek Stingley Jr. He wants to be a Texan for his entire career.
How important is it for you to get a deal done and remain a Houston Texan?
Well, I mean, I want to stay in Houston the rest of my career, really. The deal, you know, the deal going to happen when it happens. You know, we still got to take care of business. I still got to work out. I still got to be there. Nico Collins, when he was doing all that last year, every day I'm in there working out, I see him working out. So, like, that's the standard that we got over there with the Texans. So that's what I'm going to try to keep on doing.
Okay, that was really interesting to me, Seth, because the question was basically about getting a deal done. And Stingley starts in there saying, you know, we'll get the deal done when the deal gets done. Got to keep coming into the building and working out. Him invoking Nico there is very interesting to me. You know, that Nico, like Stingley, you know, in the building every day in the off season, doing his work. Nick Caserio points that out to you and I whenever he comes on with us. He points out that Stingley is a guy who's here the entire off season doing his thing, which was a big deal back when he was getting hurt all the time. But Stingley invoking Nico, who eventually got a contract extension after his third season, is very interesting to me.
But who also, you know, Nico never talked about how he deserved it or the team owed it to him or that this is the right thing to do or anything like that. I think taking things at face value, because you could easily, lots of times people say all the right things while, you know, intending something otherwise altogether. I think that Stingley is just very much seems like a guy that genuinely just cares about playing really good football and that the rewards will come when you do that, whether he agitates for it or not. I don't know. I don't know, and I don't expect that even if he did, that it would ever be public. Now, that Nico Collins, his agent was
Rosenhaus.
Drew Rosenhaus, who's not as public as he used to be, whereas Derek Stingley fired his agent to hire David Mulligetta last year.
Yeah.
Mulligetta's got a bit more of a... Mulligetta's the new Rosenhaus. Mulligetta's the up-and-coming young agent that just gets all these marquee deals for everybody. So I could see it becoming more contentious, I suppose, but I got to also point out that Micah Parsons was in a similar situation this last offseason. Micah Parsons himself, despite all the weird things that Micah Parsons says about every other thing, Micah Parsons didn't say a thing about whether he should or should not get an extension. And it really wasn't an issue. It didn't become billboard material or anything like that, or you know, headline material. So I think that Derek Stingley, who's much more understated than Micah Parsons, I really, really doubt he publicly agitated.
I don't either.
And
we should point out, you're bringing up Micah Parsons because he, too, is a Mulligetta client, is why you're bringing him up there. So, in case people didn't know. I don't think Stingley's agitating there. I think he's being honest with what he looks at as an example of somebody who got a deal after 3 years. I think he's just giving an honest answer. I think the interesting thing is Nico Collins got a deal done, but I think a lot of people view that deal, and maybe even viewed that deal at the time, as a bit of an underpay. You know, that the Texans got a in retrospect, the Texans got a phenomenal deal. But I think even at the time, when all those receiver contracts were popping, you know, Amon-Ra St. Brown's getting $30 million, and Jalen Waddle's getting $29 million, and here's Nico Collins getting $24 million, I'd be very surprised if Derek Stingley Jr. takes a contract or gets a contract that's under market.
So Derek Stingley Jr. he was better at his position in his job than Nico Collins was at his job the year before he got his extension.
Yeah,
right? That's not an insult to Nico Collins. It's just Derek Stingley was all pro this past season.
He was the best, yeah.
But like Nico Collins, Derek Stingley has an injury history.
Yeah.
And that's something that I don't think you can take lightly, because Derek Stingley's availability issues have been a problem going back to his sophomore year in college. This is the first time he's been completely healthy for an entire season since his freshman year in college.
Mm-hmm.
So I guess that's the give and take there is, all right, is the average per year right there up at the top, but maybe it's a year shorter? Or what are the protections the Texans have for the fact that Stingley's had durability issues?
Yeah, 1 year.
And is Mulligetta and Stingley, are they willing to account for that?
Are they acknowledging that? Yeah. How do you feel about it? Like, how worried are you about the injury history after him having he was one of the only guys that played all 17 games plus in the playoffs this year.
I'm still concerned about it. I think that, like with Nico, I think he's probably done some things to figure out how to recover better from week to week.
Yeah.
I think with Stingley, one of the things you worry about sometimes is this a guy who's going to be perpetually overtrained? Like the J.J. Watt dynamic where, man, the guy works so much that I don't know if he's actually letting his body recover enough. So if that's part of him kind of understanding how to, you know, put limits sometimes at how much he's working out, especially in the off season, like, just as long as there's a plan for staying healthy and it was something that paid dividends. You go back to Carlos Correa. Carlos Correa had all those issues with his back, but he figured out how to deal with it, and it didn't become an issue again. You know, his injury issues now are whatever that anomaly is in his lower leg. So I'm not extremely concerned about it, but I can't ignore it.
I think Bregman's a good example, too, of that. You know, like, Bregman had, like, 2 years worth of hamstring, quad, soft tissue injuries, and then finally figured something out. Now he's among the most durable players, you know, other than the chips in his elbow this year, which he played through. He didn't go on the injured list or anything like that. I think Bregman's a good example of that, too. Obviously, so completely different sports.
I think he gets a new deal, and I think that people will try to make a huge issue out of it because they get bored in the offseason. It's a... I mean, you already started seeing people, pay him now. Like, all right, well, they're not even allowed to pay him right this moment. You can just wait until the league year begins at least. But I would predict my over-under would be a new deal announced for Derek Stingley sometime in, like, mid-August.
Yeah, Nico.
When was Nico?
Nico was in the summertime sometime.
Yeah.
It was because he did a lot of interviews. He had several interviews where he kind of downplayed the whole thing. But, yeah, if I remember correctly, it was in the summertime. May 28th, 2024. So, you know, whatever. Late spring, early summer. Late May is when Nico got his. 3 years, $72 million. One of the best bargains in football if he can figure out his hamstrings.
I think Mulligetta holds out for a little bit longer than that. It's not a holdout, per se. I shouldn't have used that term.
Right.
But I wonder if it just... maybe it comes... I don't want to say it comes down to the wire, because if it doesn't happen, it doesn't happen. But I think the Texans, they like to stay out ahead of this. The other thing that's good, for as much as people get frustrated, myself included, with Laremy Tunsil at times, Laramie's kind of set a template for this team where Laremy accepts a shorter-term deal, but a very good deal. And just the length of the contract is the protection for the team there. That if there's injuries or if a guy just falls off a cliff in terms of performance, it's a relatively short deal, but it's a big chunk of guaranteed money. I could see the Texans doing that with Derek Stingley.
All right. The latest on Alex Bregman we're going to get to for sure. We have a big announcement that we're making programming-wise at the top of the next segment. It's also a Rodeo Ticket Tuesday here. Make sure you're listening in the next hour for a chance to win tickets to see Bailey Zimmerman at the Houston Livestock Show and Rodeo. Big announcement coming up next. Stay there.